Hey, it's Buster Olney of the Baseball Tonight podcast. With ESPN Daily, you can wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN. It's told by the top reporters and insider on the planet. Plus, Mina Kimes does such a great job with it. The breaking news of SportsCenter with a deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode is one I thought our listeners would especially enjoy. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Over the last few weeks, every sports fan in America has been waiting to see when or if the major leagues will resume play. For the most part, everything's been indefinite, vague, and it's been an open question as to whether some seasons will even begin at all. But Jeff, you are now hearing that baseball has a plan.
Baseball hopes to have a plan. And the issue with this plan, Mina, is that there are so many different ways that it can go sideways. There are so many places where it can fall apart. But what everyone has come to realize is that this is the best option. And if the best option is potentially sequestering yourself inside of a hotel and baseball stadiums for potentially up to 4.5 months in Phoenix, Arizona, during the summer when it's about 110, 120 or so degrees, and doing this while the rest of the nation happens to be tuning in because there are no other sports, that is a plan that you try to make happen. And it's a plan you try to make happen, especially if you have the backing of federal health officials, which really is what has been pushing this thing forward from the start.
Ever since baseball's opening day came and went, it's been an open question when the sport might return. Now, the league thinks it might have an answer. Senior MLB insider Jeff Passan joins today's show to discuss baseball's plan to bring the sport back in May. Then he interviews Dan Straley, a pitcher with the Latte Giants in South Korea, about the rigorous steps they've taken there to resume play. How did they do it? And could it happen here too? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Tuesday, April 7th. This is ESPN Daily. And then we come back together.
Beautiful.
Jeff, let's start here. I think the reason why so many of the leagues have been so very vague about targeting a return date or a start date in this case has been the high degree of uncertainty around the pandemic. Why do you think MLB and the union agreed to target mid-May, which is earlier than a lot of people speculated?
It is. And I think it really speaks to the fact that both of them want to come back and get as many games as possible this year. And they feel like they have stumbled upon a plan in which they can do it. Now, it's a plan with a really high degree of difficulty. And we have to remember that this whole time. Like, if this thing falls apart spectacularly, not sure that anyone's going to be surprised, but what you are going to have, I think, is players who are motivated to get paid and a league that is motivated not to lose a season. And when you have both of those things working together, all of the logistics can get figured out. That's just a matter of time. And whether it's May like they're hoping for or June like might be more realistic, I think they're going to do everything that they can because they know if this does not work, then the backup alternative is probably no season in 2020.
So walk us through the plan. What are the broad strokes?
All in all, every major league player is going to move to Phoenix, Arizona, or the surrounding area, where he will live in a hotel and go between that hotel and the ballpark. And when I say the ballpark, there's Chase Field where the Diamondbacks play. There are 10 other spring training facilities there where other teams play. And then you've got other stadiums around the area that, because there are going to be no fans in the stands for these games, could be used. You're going to essentially, Mina, have baseball in a biosphere. And the idea is that if you have a contained situation, then the likelihood of somebody contracting coronavirus is less. If you go through all of these strict protocols that are being outlined by the public health officials who have behind the scenes been rubber stamping this. And it is that rubber stamp from the health officials that has given MLB really confidence to push this thing forward, and the Players Association confidence to take it to the wider group of players and test out and see if they're really ready to do this, to do what essentially would be the closest thing you can imagine for athletes to military conscription, where they're going to be by themselves, separated from their families for an indefinite amount of time.
Well, other than, you know, living in a sort of bubble, what else will the athletes have to do to make this work?
They're going to have to deal with life like they have never known before, right? Like, if you're an athlete, you go to the ballpark, you play your game, you either go out afterward, but you have free will. Like, that's what life was like before coronavirus. Right now, if this plan happens to work, when they get to the ballpark, they're probably going to get their temperature taken. They're probably going to have coronavirus tests taken fairly regularly, as long as they are in a large enough supply. And that's another thing. You know, Major League Baseball doesn't want to have the same situation that the NBA did, where it looked like they were getting preferential testing. They're hoping that by the time May rolls around, the supply of testing will be large enough where they'll be able to get quick tests and be able to really take care of everybody who is inside that bubble. But the question, Mina, is can they actually do that? Will you have, you know, 1,000 potentially plus players, because they're going to have expanded rosters under this plan? Coaches, managers, umpires, bus drivers, people who are cooking the food, hotel workers. We can go on and on and on about the number of people who have to abide by this plan to make it work. And the discipline that that would take is so extraordinary that I think a seamless summer in which games are played and a player doesn't contract coronavirus or someone involved doesn't contract coronavirus is really unlikely. The question at that point is, what will happen if something like that takes place? And will they be in a position to continue playing? And I think the answer that baseball has by undertaking this plan is yes, we would continue through that, because we hope that what we have in place in terms of testing will prevent the spread if somebody does come into the biosphere with coronavirus.
Is that why they would hypothetically have the expanded rosters? If someone does test positive, and then they would, you know, quarantine them, test everyone, figure out who was around them, but try to keep going on with baseball?
That's exactly right. Between that and the just the sweltering heat in Phoenix, I mean, the idea of seeing a 9-inning complete game, like that's probably not going to happen when it's 110 outside and they're playing. And, you know, the time of games may wind up shifting. Hmm. There may be games that are played, Mina, at 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, but at least it's not like 110. And these are the logistical issues that we're going to be talking about a lot in the coming weeks and months, if in fact this plan continues on the right track. But the first thing they have to do is get a deal between the players and MLB that really covers all of the basics about how this might work.
What about on the field? I mean, you mentioned the expanded rosters. What other changes might we see to the actual game itself?
Oh, it's got a chance to be amazing. Like, it really does. And it's got a chance to be amazing because I think everybody involved in this understands that this is going to be an asterisk year no matter what. I mean, the fact that if Major League Baseball is back out there publicly, it can model the kinds of behavior that it wants, that you know, federal officials want the public to see. So, for example, instead of players sitting in the dugout, you could potentially see them sitting in the empty stand 6 feet away from each other. Now, is that going to happen? I don't know. You could potentially have an electronic strike zone, so you don't have the umpire hovering over the catcher and right next to the batter. I'm almost positive if games are played this year, there will be no mound visits. You could have more of the all-access type games where players are mic'd up, because this is going to become a TV-only sport. And if baseball is a TV-only sport, it's got to do a much better job of selling itself to a public that, for years now has been watching it decreasingly. Like, this is baseball's chance to remind fans why they should love it. And I think that's a really big allure for the sport as well. And one of the reasons why it's as gung-ho as it is on this, both on the league side and the player side.
So, Jeff, obviously a lot has to happen between now and May for this to work. But based on the conversations you've had with your sources, how do people feel about it? Are they nervous? Are they hopeful? Are they skeptical? Where is the mindset?
I think it's more hopeful and skeptical. And I understand both parties. You know, the hopeful side is, hey, we want to try and play baseball this year. And if this is the best way to do it, we owe it to ourselves to at least make an effort to do it this way. And I get that, especially if they feel like they can do it safely or as safely as possible. And, you know, the risk, I mean, the risk could be great. Like if you have a giant spread throughout a clubhouse, it is a disaster for baseball, an absolute disaster. So while the reward of being back first is huge, the risk there is enormous as well. But I think ultimately baseball just wants to get back. And I was, you know, I was talking with one person earlier today who I said to him, what do you think about the Arizona plan? And he said, other than the fact that it puts people in danger, that the logistics are a nightmare, that it's going to be 120 degrees and listed off like 10 other things. He's like, I love it.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then I will pass the interview mic to you because you chatted with former MLB pitcher Dan Straley, who's now pitching in Korea, where they're already beginning to prepare for their season, which will begin in a couple of weeks. And they've already implemented some of the changes you might see Major League Baseball take up. Now, Jeff Passan continues his series on how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting baseball around the world by chatting with pitcher Dan Straley.
So, Dan, thank you for joining us. Tell us, where are you right now?
Busan, South Korea.
And what is your job these days? Who do you play for?
The Lotte Giants here in the KBO. We're fortunate enough that I got a chance to come play for a team. It's in the second largest city here in Korea. So I'm in kind of a busier, bigger city here. I think there's like 3.5 million people is what I was told.
So you are currently a member of the Korean baseball organization team, the Lotte Giants. What is the current status of this season for the league?
We are in a giant holding pattern. You know, we thought we were coming in for the landing, and now we're just going circles around the city. Obviously, you know, things changed and everything got kind of get pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. The idea is to hopefully start, I've heard, the 1st and the 5th, like, of May. So it's kind of, we're you know, at least a month out, but we're in our holding pattern of workout, game, day off. We're working 3 days, taking a day off. It's a very different schedule than we're used to in America, but it's one that, you know, we're adapted to pretty quick over here when we're just trying to still get our work in and stay ready, but also to like not overdo it because we don't have a firm start date yet.
Your start date was supposed to be March 28th, and here we are more than a week out from that. How has that affected you, both as a pitcher and as someone who's going to a brand new country and just learning what it's like to be an American in Korea?
Everybody's, you know, kind of just lower your expectations on what you expect to get done, like each day, in terms of like, don't be, you know, don't have like a set plan or a set schedule where it's like things are going to change a lot. Like we've had days where we came in and one of our teammates wasn't feeling very well. So practice got canceled. Because it's not worth the risk. he went to get tested for the virus, and we all stayed home and were stayed in our condos for the day until like 5 or 6 p.m. We got a text saying, hey, he's completely fine, just not feeling well, but he's negative for the virus. So, you know, go get yourself some food outside your house finally. I went to order food the other day in this little like chicken restaurant, and this lady, she was obviously not a word of English, and me not a word of Korean or three words of Korean. I just ended up typing on my phone on the translator app, like, make me your best dish, I trust you. And she just got like excited, and then she cooked me some food, put it in a box, and sent me on my way. And
do you have any idea what you ate that day?
Yeah, it was chicken. It was half chicken, half shrimp. She went to the, I saw her go to the back, and she got like the different sauce out. And I was thinking like, oh my gosh, she's teaching this foreigner a lesson. She's getting him the spiciest sauce he's got. And it was the opposite. It was like this, like kind of like sweet with like a little bit of heat. She's like kind of like getting me the softer stuff. I was just, you know, close enough to my condo that I felt safe. It's tough to be in a foreign country that's, because we're not on lockdown here. We're able to move around, but you know, you still don't want to like, you know, push it too much kind of thing. But it's, you know, it's hard to just sit still when you just get to a brand new place.
You're playing games right now, but they're not normal games exactly. They are inter-squad games in a completely empty stadium. What has that been like?
It's been a challenge to find your focus at times. We might find ourselves in stadiums with no fans at the beginning. I don't know that for sure, but I have a feeling that's what it's going to be, because that's the safest thing to do in terms of keeping the players, the staff, and the public safe. I mean, that's going to be the first three goals when it comes to when we start up games. And so I think in a way it's kind of preparing us for that.
So you just got here now after 8 years in the big leagues. And the first games that you are playing, these inter-squad games, there are people on the field wearing masks. How much cognitive dissonance is there being on the field in the middle of a global pandemic, seeing this game that you know, where players spit, where players give each other high fives, where pitchers lick their fingers habitually, and knowing that all of that is verboten now, all of that is going to be, if not frowned upon, then plain outlawed.
Yeah, I definitely never really thought of it like in that sort of detail. You go to your mouth, you go to your forehead, you touch your face constantly as a pitcher. I don't know why we do, but we do. One thing that's like a little different too is they don't rub up the baseballs. So the baseballs are basically pre-treated. So when they show up to you pearly white, they have a little bit of like tackiness to them. Not like, they're just not the smooth glass table type leather that they have in MLB. Like it's got like a little bit more than that. So you just need, basically the idea is that there's no foreign substances needed. Like you have sweat and rosin and you have all the grip in the world that you need. And so the baseballs haven't been touched by seven people to get to you. They've been touched by the ball boy and the umpire, which is still too many when you're going to be touching your face like in times like this. But at the same time, you know that those people walked through the same security precautions that you did to get into the stadium. I'm not touching my face so much when I'm pitching, and definitely not licking my fingers. I'll find some sweat on my forehead if I need a little bit of moisture, but during the actual game, like I didn't really notice the guys wearing the mask. I mean, obviously I saw it, but like, it wasn't like I was like, oh, I'm pitching to this guy wearing a mask. He could have been wearing a clown hat. I probably wouldn't have noticed either. You know, you're focused in doing your job. And so just another layer of being able to play here. But if that's what it takes for us to be able to play baseball games, then so be it.
I had never thought of how many people touch a baseball at a Major League Baseball stadium before it actually goes onto the field to play. That's an incredible point. And this is the type of thing when you're trying to come back that you have to think about. It's not just securing venues. It's not just figuring out you know, are fans going to be in the stadium or not? It's something as small as how many people touch the baseball before it gets into the pitcher's hand, and what does the chain look like of potential infection passed along? And that is the very scary thing about the world we're in now. And you're playing in Korea because you love baseball and because you love pitching. And so amid all of this going on in the world and in your life right now, you get to go out there and pitch. How much of an escape is it from what is actually going on around you? And how normal and natural does it feel?
I think it keeps me sane. You know, I talk to a lot of guys that are back in the States and they're all curious, like, what are you guys doing? When are you guys starting? How are things going? You know, because and a few of them had opportunities to come over here that chose to stay in America. And, you know, at this point, like, you know, it's looking like I made the right choice to come over here just for the simple fact that I'm playing. Getting a chance to do what I'm good at is like anybody else, like going to work. Like, I'm sure a lot of people would just wish they could just go to work right now. Having a purpose, we all need a purpose, and going to work is a lot of people's purpose. And so I think that because I haven't lost my purpose, I'm still going to work every day. I'm working towards an opening day. I'm working towards a season and preparing for all that. Like, it gives me, you know, it gives me a lot more like just daily motivation to keep going and to, you know, make sure that I'm doing my part to keep myself clean and keep this thing from spreading.
Coming up, what baseball games look like now in Korea and how MLB might follow by example.
What's happening here in the U.S.? No one's playing baseball here. No college, no minor league, no MLB, no Little League. We have shut down everything. I think one thing people want to hear is, how is it possible in Korea that you're playing right now? What is the day-to-day life like there that you feel like has allowed Korea to get to this point, whether it's taking temperatures when you go into buildings or other little such things that here in America we might not even think is realistic or possible, but it's happening where you're living right now.
We're in a mask culture where everywhere you go, you have to wear a mask. And to the point of when we first got here, Hank Conger went into the bank, didn't have his mask on. Security guard walked right up to him right away and they're like, you're not welcome in here. Like, you're not wearing a mask. Like, you're not allowed to be in here. When I went to Costco, we picked up our shopping cart and they stopped you and they completely wiped down the shopping cart before you're allowed to enter the store. You had to be wearing a mask and most people were wearing gloves. Again, that was probably 2.5-3 weeks ago, or whenever I got here. I've lost track of days like everybody else. When we walk in the stadium, when we first got here, it was a temperature on your forehead. We go out to eat. There's many restaurants. If you walk in the door, temperature your forehead, and then you have to take hand sanitizer if you're going to come in. Well, now our stadium is temperature on the forehead. Now it's hand sanitizer and a heat like camera. You walk through a heat camera that tells your temperature. And if it's, you know, if you're too warm, like, you're out of here. Like, you're not allowed. The place gets shut down because you entered the front door. They'll close it and clean it. The hand sanitizer, like, it's everywhere and it's super cheap. Like, it's just kind of like, it's just part of the culture where it was just ready to go. Basically, my apartment condo building is like 2 minutes away. I can be from my couch to my locker within 5 minutes, which is really nice when you don't speak the language in the area. You're not trying to take cabs to and from the field every day. The community around where my stadium is here is just not as busy as it should be, as it would be without the virus. There's places in the city that I saw pictures of that, like, on a normal insert this day of the week here, like, it's super, super crowded, and saw pictures of the place with not a person there. You think, given the situation where the whole epicenter for this country I'm in right now was only about an hour north of here. And so you know, we got the second largest city just right next to it, but yet they're able to essentially contain it very quickly. And I think that's been helping life get back to normal a little more quickly. But again, we're talking, it's been 5-6 weeks since the major, you know, I guess, outbreak here really started. And so it just, it's taken some time like everywhere else, but it's been slowing down here.
And that's really nice to hear. Your wife, Amanda, how does she feel about this entire situation with you halfway across the world in the middle of a global pandemic?
Yeah, well, to throw one more layer on top of it, she's a nurse. And so she has had her fair share of stress about the whole thing. Right now, she's actually very fortunate that she's actually working from home, started 2 days ago, where she's basically calling and checking in on people and consulting people. You know, I'm very proud of the work she does, but I'm also very appreciative of the fact that she is now working from home. Yeah, they're just they're doing the best they can like everybody else, you know, ordering takeout and doing the ordering groceries and you know, trying to stay home as much as possible. Kind of glad that we don't live in a big neighborhood, that we live, you know, kind of out a little bit on the edge of town where we got a little bit of space around us. So, you know, my son can go outside and play a little bit.
You know, the Chinese Basketball League wanted to come back, postponed. Nippon Professional Baseball in Japan wanted to come back fairly quickly. They have postponed as well. In your mind, do you have a sense of what would cause the KBO to backtrack from what feels like a fairly aggressive date to try and come back? And what it would take in order to be out there on opening day, or at least this adjusted opening day that we're dealing with?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's actually been laid out to us already. So we start our games on the 21st, practice games, spring training games, if you will. And we have 6 games and there's 10 teams. So, you know, everybody's playing 6 games. And if we get through those 6 games with no player or staff member getting the virus, then we move forward. If anybody, if the number one starting pitcher to like the person, the cleaning security to R&D to anybody gets sick in that time, we postpone 2 weeks. Like, this is about keeping the people safe. This is about keeping our employees safe. This is about keeping our fans safe and keeping as many people from getting sick as they can possibly control. And they've made us feel very comfortable to be here. You know, I was pretty nervous to come to a foreign country during this, all this. And these guys have done an incredible job of making us feel comfortable, making us feel safe since we got here.
Clearly, the decisions are being made at very high levels. How is that being passed down to you? What's the communication chain of command like where you're learning of these things?
Our translators tell us a lot, but again, different than major leagues, I get texts from our general manager a lot about this stuff where he's completely bilingual. He's giving us firsthand knowledge. He's making sure that we're informed, that we're comfortable. He's done a lot for us in terms of making us feel that we're being, you know, being told things first. Like, the last thing he wants us to do is read about something about our team on the internet before we hear it from him. It's different, but it's also welcoming just to have that kind of upfront, like just blatant honesty with us from the front office to just be like, here's what's going on. Listen, like, that'll probably change, but I just want to make sure you know where we're at now. And that's been nice. Even though the date keeps moving back, it keeps giving us hope. We have a date that's not like, oh, you know, January of next year. Like, we have a date that's much closer than that. It keeps giving us hope and keeps us going each day.
Dan, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.